Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Ben Holderness. Thank you so much for clicking on the Holderness Family Podcast.
And this is our book club edition.
P.S. Book club!
We want to make this accessible, so we're not going to give any huge spoilers about the characters. So if you want to read the book later, this will just be a good setup for you. And also, Penn is joining us. He's representing the people who show up to book club who just want to drink the wine.
That's right, Kim.
So he hasn't actually read the book, but the premise of it is deeply fascinating, so I promise it'll be a good one.
Yeah, I've never been to a book club, and so I'm really excited about this. What I've heard from book clubs is that it leads to some deep discussions, mm-hmm. even from those who are just there for the wine.
Exactly.
And apparently there's quite a few of those.
Yeah. So quick housekeeping. We have some new merch items coming into our shop and details about our next book and game. We should do a book club for your book, Penn.
Yes, when it comes out.
Yeah, so we're going to have some good Black Friday specials. So stay informed. Go to our newsletter. It's theholdernessfamily.com/newsletter. Sign up there. And we'll, you know, kind of keep you in the loop. Okay, this week we have Nikki Ehrlich, author of The Measure, on our podcast. And we're going to try a new format. Like I said, it's a book club. You guys, we asked for questions. You sent some great ones in. And before we get started and have Nikki join us via Zoom, we are going to give you a little bit of her background and then some background of the book.
Yeah, Nikki Ehrlich's debut novel, The Measure, was an instant New York Times bestseller upon publication in June of 2022. My wife immediately read it, I remember, and was very excited, could not put it down. Her work has appeared on Today, New York Magazine, Newsweek, The Huffington Post, Literary Hub, Indigard Travel, Book Trib, and Vox Media, basically everywhere. As a travel writer, she explored nearly a dozen countries on assignment, from rural villages in France to the Arctic fjords of Norway. As a ghostwriter, she's written for CEOs, entrepreneurs, and academics. Nikki graduated Harvard University summa cum laude and was an editor of the Harvard Crimson. She earned her master's degree in global thought from Columbia University.
Remind me to ask her, like, what that's really fancy education uh-huh. right there. How that impacted?
How many times has she shown her GPA?
Right. Like, exactly. Yeah. As we're navigating the college process,
yeah.
with a teenager,
I'm like,
did Harvard help you in this? Okay.
Are you hoping the answer is no?
I'm hoping, because here's my thing about school, is that. I mean, Harvard's great. That's a very impressive life and a resume. But gosh, you know, I kind of want Lola to have a life too. Lola has enough. She's good enough grades. She could go to Harvard. But I'm like, God. I mean, did you have a good time? Anyway, here we go. About The Measure. The Measure follows eight characters and their intertwined journey as they contemplate the length of their life and how they live it. It starts like this. On a particular day, a box appears on the doorstep of every person over the age of 22. Seriously, if you live in a tent, a box appears, it finds you. If you live in an apartment, it finds you. On the box is an inscription. It says, "The measure of your life lies within." Inside the box is a string. And quickly it's deduced that the length of the string is the length of your life. So
of your remaining life or of your total life.
Total so life. If you have a short string, your life is going to be shorter. People are faced with the question, do I want to know how long I'll live? Do you open the box? So all of a sudden the world changes. So society collectively discriminates against people who are short stringers. And so the fate of these characters, some who know how long they live and some who've made the choice to not open it up, they're all intertwined in a very beautiful way. And they're so thought-provoking.
Okay.
Yeah. So
can I ask a stupid question before she gets on?
It's not stupid.
I don't want her to, okay.
No stupid
questions. So let's say I'm 80.
Okay.
And the string tells me that I'm going to live to be 81. Is my string long because I'm already 80 or is it tiny because I've only got one more year?
I think it would be long because you've lived a long time.
So the string is the total number of years.
I believe so.
Okay. I got it. And I guess like over
you
the-
can add, that's not a dumb question.
Well, I feel like anyone who's read this book would know the answer, but
I think
it sounds
it's
like you're not
long.
Really sure.
No, okay. No. I think it's long. I don't think it's your remaining life. I think it's your total life.
So the world figures it out and they take it up to a ruler because someone online has figured it out and they're like, okay, this is 81 years.
Right.
That's how it works?
Yeah. So through technology, you know, eventually people are able to decide, you know, they're able to tell within a few days. Not the exact moment you'll die, but like with a very like, oh, I have another 2 weeks.
Okay, she's here. Let's bring her on. And I feel like I'm gonna seem really dumb asking this question, but I'm gonna ask it anyway.
No, you're not.
Okay, here comes Nikki.
So welcome to the show, Nikki Ehrlich.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I am so excited. I'll tell you, I stumbled upon your book in a very organic way. We were at the beach and we were in a beach house and a previous renter had left it. And
really?
So, yeah, had probably, which I do that too.
That's a cool thing to do.
I try to leave books behind if I'm in places. And so I was like, well, this would be great. And read it very quickly, became upset. And again, it started such good conversation. So first of all, thank you. And then congratulations on its success.
Thank you so much. It's been a wild ride. I'm feeling super, super lucky.
Well, and as a debut novel, this has got to be... I mean, take me back to where the idea of this came from and then your writing process. Like, did it come to you in a cloud and then all of a sudden you just like took off writing nonstop or did you have to really, was it, you know, a process?
Yeah, it came to me a while ago, back in like 2018. I had the idea based on ancient Greek mythology and that they believed in these three fates, the idea that these three of goddesses would weave these strings of life for all of the mortals down below. Mm-hmm. And I just found that really fascinating, the idea that there were these three women who had this power, three sisters. And I thought, what if these strings were real? And what if we humans could see them? What would we do with them? How would they affect us, you know, individually in our personal lives, in our professional lives? And then how might they affect kind of the whole of society and larger communities? And so I started writing 2018, 2019. I had a job at the time. I was working as a travel writer. And so the writing was going slowly. It was more kind of evenings and weekends. And then, of course, March 2020 happened. And working in the travel industry at the time, you know, I got laid off within kind of 48 hours of sort of the news breaking here.
Must have been the most unsurprising call of all time.
Yeah, it was surprising how quickly it happened from, you know, oh, something is happening kind of in other countries, but not here. We're okay. And then, you know, I remember watching the news and I think the day that maybe Tom Hanks got COVID.
That was really scary.
Right. Yeah. That was the day that it really hit here. And I think probably the next morning I lost my job because it was very sort of shocking and, you know, destabilizing at the time. And I was very upset. I was sort of crying to my parents. What am I going to do now? But I'm very fortunate that they were really the ones who said, well, you know, no one else is going to hire a travel writer right now. So why don't you really finish this book that you've been trying to write? And so I ended up kind of using that time to really just spend kind of feverish 12-hour days writing and kind of finish the first draft of the book in just a couple of months of sort of my unemployed quarantine days.
Mm-hmm. I remember... in the you know, during quarantine and during COVID, we were very busy. We were producing kind of like silly, you know, song and dance content. And it was the busiest we had ever been. But I think you could probably find moments on this podcast where I say, I can't wait to see the art created out of this pandemic, because it gave people such time. And I'm sorry you lost your job, but I almost thank you for losing your job, because if you hadn't, you wouldn't have the chance to have created this, right?
Yeah, it really has changed my perspective. It's something that I'm trying to hold on to, that, you know, something that feels in the moment like this terrible thing. I, you know, how can any good come out of this? And then you just don't know. And so I, you know, now a year later, 2 years later, I'm looking back, and that was such a blessing in disguise that happened. And I have to kind of, I'm trying to reframe my view toward kind of what feels like failure, what feels like setback in the moment, and just think, you never know, you know, when you look back on this, what it actually is going to turn into.
That's a really beautiful message that I think we all need to be reminded of. Yeah. I'm really curious when we talk to authors, because we've written nonfiction. We've written one book, Pen is Turning in a Manuscript. Like, it's due. We're doing like the final check is due Friday. So on a nonfiction, I kind of know how that process seems for us, at least. What is on a fiction book? You were saying 12-hour days. Did you know how you wanted the characters to end? Or is this like, are you just doing brain dump? It's just coming out of your fingers.
Yeah, there's the big kind of debate among fiction writers. If you're, you know, if you plot things out in advance, you have an outline, you know everything, or you just kind of fly by the seat of your pants and just figure it out as you go. I had an ending in mind for all of the characters, but I had no idea how I was going to get there. So I was really just writing my way towards an ending, and also kind of being open to the fact that the book would change, that I came up with the idea for the book in 2018. It was a concept that kind of dealt, you know, very head on with questions of life and death and kind of facing your mortality and sort of bigger questions about community. And so then I had to be open to things changing based on what was going on in the world, based on, you know, watching the way the pandemic unfolded, watching kind of political events at the time. And so a lot of the story really changed as I was writing based on just what was happening outside my window. Mm-hmm. And so the process was really evolving.
It's been a question that I've been asked, and it's been in the book of questions. It's been a philosophical question that you've asked around the campfire in college, like for your entire life. Like, if you could know the absolute time and date of your death, would you want to know it? So that concept itself has been around for a while. I think that your mechanism has not. Like, just imagining a world where it's just freely and openly given to people and all they have to do is open the box.
Yes.
And I gathered all that from having never read the book.
Isn't this an option?
But I think it's a great concept.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we asked our audience four questions, and one of them said, you know, did you think of any other units of measure besides a string? Mm-hmm. But you were saying the string kind of came organically because of the three fates.
Yes, the string was sort of the original idea. And then the box came a little later because I didn't want people to be forced to see their string. I want it to be, you know, as you said, a choice. Like, do I want to know this or not? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, how could it be this choice? And then because I was thinking about kind of Greek mythology, I remembered Pandora's box and thought maybe it can be, you know, a Pandora's box for each person. And it becomes this question of, you know, do you have the willpower to kind of resist the temptation to look?
So that question actually came from Debbie Thomas in California. I would acknowledge the people who sent in questions. And then Melissa Knights from Florida asked about the backstory, which you sort of answered. And then this question came from Stephanie Batista, who I had the same question. You never really answer where the strings come from. Is there a reason that we never really know where the strings in the boxes originate from?
Yes, definitely. It was a decision I had to make early on and one that I kind of went back and forth on. And one that I know has, you know, has prompted some controversy. Some people tell me that they're very, you know, grateful that they don't get this answer. Other people tell me they're very upset that they didn't get this answer. But I think I wanted to tell a human story and not necessarily a story about, you know, these supernatural strings and where they came from and who's creating them. I was more interested in what we as people do with them and what we do kind of in our individual choices in our lives, and then what we do as, you know, a broader community when you are divided between some people who have this knowledge, some people who don't have the knowledge, people who know they're living a short life, people who know they're living a long life, of what does that do to us as a community? That was more fascinating for me necessarily than coming up with the idea of where the boxes came from. Mm-hmm. But I acknowledge that I was sort of, going to maybe upset some people with that withholding.
So my favorite book of all time is a sci-fi book, and it's called Seven Eves. And it's the first sentence is that the moon blew up with no prior warning. And then, it's an amazing book. He's and then it's like it's 800 pages of the annihilation of Earth as a result of the moon blowing up. But they never explain why. And so Neal Stephenson, the author, gets this same thing, and he's like, no, it doesn't matter. What matters is the effect, not the cause. So you're there with him, and I agree with it. I also think sometimes it's fun. Like I love the end of The Sopranos. Well, everyone got mad at that.
Yeah.
Like it just goes to black. Like use your imagination and let that be part of it, because it's not important. And I don't know if you've noticed, I'm not really asking questions. I'm just making comments over here.
He's drinking his Chardonnay.
I'm just swizzling my Savvy Bee, and I'm just making drunk comments and pretending like I've read the book when I haven't.
So the question obviously most people asked Penn and I, and then I'm sure you've been asked this in every single interview, is would you open your box? So I ask you first, Nikki, would you open your box to see how long your life would be?
At the moment, no, I would not open the box. I would just keep it somewhere in my house, kind of that I could see it as a reminder to maybe like live a little more mindfully, it's there. But right now I'm very lucky and very happy with my life. I'm just going to leave it closed.
You said right now, what would change that?
Or if you were given that box in March of 2020, when things were bleak.
Yeah, I hopefully I would have been able to keep it closed. I'd be much more tempted to open my loved ones' boxes, but that's for them to do. It's not for me to do. I don't know what would change it. Maybe just any big life changes I'd be going through later. But right now I'm trying to leave it closed and just kind of live as well as I can. Yeah. What about you two?
I hear you. I love a spoiler. So, but knowing that about
even in your own life,
even in my own, I'm very open. Like I have some like really rocking anxiety. And part of it is because I just want to know how things are going to go.
Yes,
and I exert control in my life. I try to control things I can control. And I get a little anxious because I don't know how it's going to turn out. None of us do. Right. Yeah. So I would not want to open it because I strive to be the type of person that could, like, let's live every day like it's my last. Like, let me live every day as if this is my last.
Yes.
But I know that in a weak moment, I'll just be like, F this, and I would open it. So I would be one that would have to just immediately destroy it because I would be really tempted. And like you, if I knew his box was available, like in a weak moment, I would totally open his, because that's something I have anxiety about that too, about my loved ones.
And of course.
So he would need to figure out like a way to hide that from me if he didn't want to know. What about you, Penn?
I would not want to know. Mm-hmm. I would not open it. I would give it, and I think everyone should do this. I would give it to not a family member or like a friend, but like someone who knows me kind of well. And have them open it so that the day before I die, they can organize and plan a living funeral.
But then
that's
really
interesting. I've never heard that.
So that, and I think everyone should do this. So that, like, because
don't know. I mean, okay, that's if knowing you're like, if you knew the day.
I don't want people to come to my funeral after I'm already dead. I want them to come to my funeral while I'm still alive, and then be like, all right, I'm dying tomorrow. And like, I would want that just because I've been around a lot of funerals, and I've been around a lot of slow, crazy, crappy deaths, and I've been around a lot of dementia over the last couple of years.
But that's the thing. And if you had dementia, because like, spoiler,
okay, here's the other
there
thing.
Is dementia
here's,
in his family. So if they
here's
knew,
the other thing.
If you're going to live 10 years.
Yeah, but I'm giving it to my friend. And if they find out, like if I start like displaying some, they can make that decision for me. But if I die in like a plane accident, then, go ahead and just do the funeral the day before. Let's say it's like next week. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm dying tomorrow. There's nothing I can do about it. The string's like batting 1,000, right? There's proof, I'm guessing, in the book that
there's proof
that there's nothing you can do to change it. And there's probably people who tried to cheat it who failed.
Absolutely.
Well, that was another question I had. One of the things, I'm like, did the people live their lives to end it sooner? I'm like, did we work ourselves into our own fate?
Yeah.
That's the question. Sure. I have.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Nikki?
Yeah, it was a question that came up early in the writing too, of, you know, does seeing the length of your string then cause you to behave in a way that kind of creates the result of the string? And I think, you know, it's a possibility for some people, but, you know, I wanted it to be that you can't change kind of when the string ends, but you don't know how the string ends. And so that could be changing based on kind of the way you're living your life. And also, it's made very clear in the book early on that people who, you know, people have a super long string, they're going to live to 110 years old. They become more kind of, maybe they take more risks. They become, you know, they're going to go jump out of a plane. They're going to do all these things because they have this really long string, but that doesn't mean that you're immune to suffering, to injury, to being in a coma for 50 of those years, to going to jail for things that you've done and living your 100 years in prison. And so it's this, you know, just because you see this in the box, that doesn't mean that kind of everything in your life is guaranteed. You're not guaranteed kind of health and happiness. And so that to me is, you know, you still have all the willpower to kind of pursue a life of a purpose and meaning and happiness, no matter when that string ends.
Hey, hang in there. We're going to be right back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is a question from Heather Head. Do you believe the world could really go in the direction your book did when we have more advancement in medical knowledge in the future that may be able to predict life expectancy down to the year? Is that something you see for us?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the book is kind of fantasy, sci-fi, of course, because I assume there will never be a situation in which we have the ability to predict kind of random accidents and things that would end someone's life early. But definitely, I think there's ways in which some of the questions of the book are questions that people are facing right now, not even necessarily in the future, but people who, you know, have genes for certain kind of terminal illnesses in their family. They're essentially being asked the question of, do I want to look at the string or not? Do I want to test to see if I have this gene or not? And I read kind of personal essays of people who have the gene for Huntington's or other diseases in their families as part of my research around kind of how would people face this question. And so it's certainly, I think, going to be even more and more in the future, more kind of ability to get ourselves tested and see what kind of our life prediction is like. But it's already here for people as well.
Were you trying to draw a parallel to the way the short string community was treated in the book to issues we've been facing in our communities right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Once I kind of created this sense that in the communities there would be a divide between people who have short strings and people who have long strings, and that kind of politicians would sort of prey upon this divide, and people would start becoming kind of fearful of people who have these short strings, of, you know, who knows what they're going to do, they're reckless, they're kind of unstable. I tried to kind of parallel the divide in that community to kind of the way that our society has historically operated, and the way that we kind of label ourselves and put ourselves into these groups. You know, you're on this side and I'm on this side, and there's not always a lot of kind of empathy and compassion in between. And we have this just intense sort of tribalism and kind of, you know, discrimination against each other. And I mean, we've always behaved this way. And so I felt it was pretty unfortunately natural that the people in this book would behave this way. But I wanted the book to really be kind of a testament to the fact that empathy and compassion among people who are different from each other can always kind of triumph over those forces of mm-hmm. prejudice and division, no matter how much kind of power we give them, that there's always, you know, personally, I like to believe and hope that kind of love and sort of respect and empathy will sort of win out in the end.
Did you have a wine club question there?
Yeah, I was about the wine club in here a little bit. So it does seem to me like it was probably intentional when you wrote this book that you wanted this to spawn conversations for the subject who's reading the book. I also noticed as we were doing this that you had a different answer from her and from me, and the reasons why were all incredibly personal. Right? Like her answer has to do with the way her brain works, with her anxiety, with her fear of the unknown. Mine is centered almost entirely around having two parents who had dementia, who died or are dying in like a slow, absolutely devastatingly painful manner, and wanting to like find a reclaim some kind of control over it. When you wrote this book, did you realize that you were going to, that this whole self-discovery was going to be a part of it?
No, I think I wrote what felt like an interesting story that was kind of bringing up some interesting questions. And it felt very relevant for me during the time of my life that I was writing, during a moment of huge uncertainty for me kind of personally and professionally, and then for, you know, the world as a whole. I too have sort of struggled with anxiety for a long time. And a lot of this book was me trying to kind of come to terms with what it means to be human, which is that, you know, bad things happen to good people, things happen out of our control, and we have to somehow find a way to accept that in order just to live our lives. And, you know, a lot of the struggle in the book was me kind of dealing with that myself. But the conversations that it sparked and sort of the self-reflection that you mentioned has been just a really unexpected surprise. And I mean, this book has been out for over a year now, and every day I still get multiple messages from readers kind of, to me personally, telling me what this book made them think of, what it kind of, how it resonated with them, what they're going through in their life. And it's just been a huge honor and just like a privilege to kind of get these personal stories from readers every single day all around the world.
It is really cool. And I've had some fun conversations. I was reading it, as I told you, at the beach, and yes. I wasn't even done with it. And I went to dinner with a couple friend of ours, and I'd asked them, you know, hey, would you open? And his answer was one of my favorites. He goes, I love my life right now. I don't want to change anything about it. And I wouldn't change anything about it. So no, I don't want to know. And I think that's when you have a level of contentment, you are totally fine to just not know. Cause if he's like, if I died tomorrow, I was doing it right at the end. And I think
that's amazing.
Yeah. I thought that was such a cool answer. And it kind of, and I love my life and I love the person I'm with, but I think I would, if I knew I had 1 year, I think I would seriously try to take, you know, I would try to enjoy myself a little more. And I think there are many days and there are many weeks where I'm living as if I'm assuming I'm going to be 95, and that's not guaranteed. So I need to sort of have a box on my dresser just to remind myself, I think.
Not to get you back into like a stress zone, but because I didn't read the book.
You didn't write it or read it.
Didn't either. Is there a thing about mothers trying to decide whether or not to read what's going to happen to their kids? Because I feel like that would be something you would struggle with.
There is a sort of smaller plot line about that. Yeah. Because there's partners deciding, should I marry this person? Should I have children with this person? You know, knowing or not knowing, you know, are we going to live the same amount of time? Are they going to kind of leave me early? All the different sort of permutations of it. I couldn't explore them all. There's so many kind of variations that could have happened, but I tried to kind of get into a few. But I've heard from a lot of couples that reading the book has become like a couple's therapy session for them, because they discuss it together. A lot of times they have different answers, and they, you know, it's a chance to kind of bring up something that they maybe haven't talked about before.
It spawned such good conversations in our house. And so for that, I thank you. So what is next for this book? I hear it's been optioned and for a TV series.
Yes, which is amazing. Yes. I'm very, very honored. Yeah, it was optioned by the production company that the Obamas founded, which was, you
I've
know,
heard of them.
Okay, so the most impressive thing possible. You said the most impressive thing possible. Got it. Okay, got it. Yep, good.
Yes, I did have to. Yeah, I had to sit down when that phone call came. So, sorry.
It wasn't like, it wasn't.
Like Michelle.
Wasn't Michelle.
Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah, I think they're a little too busy to make, you know, little daily phone calls like that. But it was a huge, obviously, just incredible. So fingers crossed that you know, something happens there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, otherwise no plans for a sequel or anything at the moment.
Yeah. And so tell us, you know, this is debut novel, no pressure or anything. So, I mean, Dr. Andy Reid, who wrote The Martian, and that was his, mm-hmm. that was his first, right? Love that.
No. Well, he'd done some, it was his first full-length novel, yes.
It was his first
full-length. But he'd written a bunch of them. He hadn't published.
That's what it was. So he'd written a bunch that maybe hadn't been published. So this was his first. And then that, obviously, you know, Matt Damon's
that's
starring.
Incredible.
Like, it's incredible. And then I'm always like, okay, no pressure. Like, are you working on something now?
Working on something now, I think, has kind of similar themes and hopefully is equally kind of thought provoking and conversation starting and has also a kind of an ensemble of characters. I think it's very hard for me to write a book that's just in one character's perspective.
Yeah.
What I love about writing is being able to jump into a lot of different people's kind of minds who are very different from me. And so I think I'll always be writing books that have at least kind of four or five narrators in them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would be thrilled if this next book sparked kind of half as much, you know, discussion and kind of interesting response as the first one has.
Absolutely. So we were reading your intro, you know, before, you know, you joined the Zoom call, kind of introducing you. So you went to Harvard and Columbia. We're parents of a junior in high school. Oh my gosh, that is.
Oh no, that's a bad time.
No. But I'm like,
stressful.
That's
stressful.
I'm like, that's very stressful, as you know, and incredibly impressive. So I was like, gosh, do you, and so I ask people who went to these Ivies and these, because she has the grades for it. She has the scores
Amazing.
For it. But I'm like, gosh, that feels like a lot of pressure. Do you feel like your background, Harvard, Columbia, set you up for success at this? Or if you had gone to your state school, do you feel like you still would have come up with this amazing novel?
No, really, I wanted to be a writer since I was like, you know, 6 years old, 7 years old. So I think I really like to think that I would have come to this no matter what. And I think the biggest thing for me, which can happen anywhere, any school, it doesn't even have to happen in school, is just having people who believed in me and mm-hmm. encouraged me. And I had a series of really amazing teachers starting from when I was in like second grade, who kind of just encouraged me to read and encouraged me to kind of enjoy what I was doing. And I had teachers start kind of giving me extra books to read outside of class because mm-hmm. they were like, you know, you seem to be really passionate about this. And so just having like one person who kind of believes in you and encourages you to pursue whatever that passion is, I really think that's, you know, that's the most important thing. And that can happen, you know, at home, in school, kind of in your local community, anywhere.
I think that's so amazing that from early on you knew what you wanted to do. I mean,
I'm very lucky.
And you had such a supportive environment. I'm still PS trying to figure out what I want to do. So I think that's really cool that you had that.
Well, that's why you guys are maybe doing so much stuff.
Yeah. It's a lot. We're doing too much. And we'll figure out what we want to do when we retire, probably. Yeah. So just to back up what Kim said, thank you for not mentioning that you went to Harvard three times before we asked you that question. I know that's a stereotype, and I know it's not true for everybody. I'd also love to know, because this has been such a smashing success, would you be willing to share some of the low points? Maybe some of the, because sometimes it takes failure to get to success.
Yeah, absolutely. There were so many times when I was writing this book that I just had the voice of kind of self-doubt and self-criticism was so loud. And, you know, times when I was writing, when I had lost my job, I had to move back in with my parents, which, you know, in my kind of mid-20s, I was living in New York City. I felt like I had, you know, made it. And then I was back to kind of, you know, being in my childhood bedroom. And there were times when I thought, you know, no one's going to read this. Who cares what you have to say? You know, why are you wasting your time? And then kind of once someone wanted to publish the book, and that was of course very exciting, very validating. But then as soon as it was, you know, starting to go out into the world, I just thought, you know, everyone's going to hate this book. And by extension, they're going to hate me. And it was sort of, you know, triggering that, like, everyone has to like me, that kind of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not all of the comments are great. You know, I get a lot of really lovely, really beautiful responses to people saying it helped me kind of, you know, it helped me when I was dealing with a loved one's illness. It helped me when I was going through something myself. But then of course there's people who comment, you know, couldn't finish it. Didn't like it at all. Not for me.
TLDR. And,
right? And for every kind of 10 great comments, if there's one bad one, the one bad one is the one that keeps me up at night. And that's the one that I remember. And so there had, so kind of shutting off the, you know, the noise of everybody outside and shutting off that own voice inside of me. That's like, you're not good enough for this. You're not courageous enough to kind of be this vulnerable and put this, you know, put yourself out into the world like this. I had to somehow quiet it all to try to just push through because I loved what I was doing and I loved the story and I wanted just like one person to read it and hopefully kind of be moved by it.
You guys have a lot in common.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I don't want anybody to go through that, but that is, sure. I will say over time, because we've been doing this internet thing for now 10 years, yeah. I did used to, same, there'd be 1,000 really positive comments and then one of like, oh,
yeah,
she looks like an old hag. And I'm like, but now I will say it has been 10 years and now they don't bother me as much. So I think I've just like hardened a little bit. So yeah. So,
I look forward to some more hardening.
It took a decade, I will say. And I will, like, we got the publisher, you know, after we pitched our first book and it was, you know, marriage relationship space. Yeah. We got the call that, yeah, they like, we're doing this, like, here, we got the contract for it. But that same day, somebody left a comment on our podcast saying, I can't listen to that woman's voice. She's so shrill. I was sitting there in tears and Penn's like, are you kidding me? Like, we just have this amazing news and he has a bottle of champagne. And I'm like, but no, this one man in, you know, a basement somewhere thinks I'm shrill. And so I have to say, like, I've gotten over that a little bit. So there's hope.
Oh, good. I'm getting a little bit better. It was harder at the beginning, of course. And luckily I had a good team who, you know, my agent, editor, they were like, stop reading the comments. They're like, don't read the online comments.
Yeah.
Just, you know, spare yourself a little bit. But I think, you know, my goal for this book was just to kind of move people the way that I have been moved by so many books in my life. You know, so many books have really touched me and kind of, you know, I still think about them to this day. And so, you know, if it's accomplishing that with some people, it's okay. It's okay if it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I feel like that's what a drunk wine lady was. Cause I've had like three glasses of Savvy B now. And I'm just
not in real life, folks. Just like he's progressing through the book club.
At the book club.
Yeah. At this point in the book club, they're not even talking about the book anymore. No. We've moved on.
Who is your celebrity top five exempt list? Who are the five celebrities that,
I mean, if you have a short string, you could just gonna go sleep
just
with everybody.
Go sleep with everybody.
No, but
that's one response. Yeah.
He just goes sleep with everybody. But I think you did want Nikki to kind of forecast for herself.
I would love.
She had a vision board for herself.
I would love.
Yeah.
Hopefully by then I've finished this book I'm currently working on and I'm on to a third book. That would be great. And and everything else is kind of up in the air. I did a big kind of life change last year. I moved from New York to California and that was completely unexpected and it's been very exciting. So I think I'm trying to be open to the fact that everything else around it can change as long as I still have kind of the people I love in my life and I'm still doing what I love. I don't know the rest of it. And I'm trying to be okay with that.
I know. It's hard not to have a spoiler of your own life. Like, I would really love to know exactly what's going to happen.
You know what else we need to ask? So I don't even know who's the main character in the book. Is there one?
Well,
main
there's
character?
Like eight characters.
It's a lot.
They all intertwine at some point or another.
Have you started ever since you got a call from the Obama production company? Are you like in your head casting like who you want to play the roles, like people that you would, if you could have anybody, have you done that yet? Cause that seems
weirdly,
like
I'm not at all. Okay. And I've seen a lot of people post on Instagram, their dream cast, which is super fun. And to all of them, I'm like, yeah, that all works. That's great. They're great.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is that when it comes to kind of adaptations, I feel like my perception is that the authors tend to be pretty kind of, you know, a little more hands-off. They're like, anything's great. And then it's the readers who get so up in arms about, you know, things that happen if they changed something about their favorite character or something, you know, they're the ones who get really upset. perhaps even on the author's behalf while the author is not that upset.
They're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is a movie.
I feel like that happened.
Exactly. That's the bigger thing.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You know.
Well, it has been a joy to talk to you. Where can people find out more information about you and keep up with you to know like when book number two is coming up? Where can people find you?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram, just my name, at Nikki Ehrlich, and my website, NikkiEhrlich.com. I'm very, very simple, very easy. Thank you so much for having me. This has been really great for stimulating a book club discussion for me right here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So quick postmortem. This is your first book club. How did you think that go? Was the wine lady too loud?
I thought the wine lady asked really good questions.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you. it makes me think I should go to more book clubs, but they don't really have those for men around here. I need them to start one.
First of all, thank you to everybody who sent in questions. I was trying to read names, but it occurred to me that some of the questions, I didn't get the names in there. But what I would love to hear from my friends out there on the interwebs is, A, did you like that? B, well, you're going to like the book. You're going to like the book if you haven't read it. If you appreciated the book discussion, and if you did, what do you think we should read next? I'm always up for suggestions. And then in theory, we'd have the author on. So, and then maybe this could turn into a big live Zoom situation.
Yeah, like we invite some of our others, our friends,
well, we
like
could
our
say,
listeners.
Hey,
anybody who wants to do it can jump on.
Yeah, like 7 p.m. on Wednesday. And yeah. And then we can either have people ask questions in there or whatever and just lead it live would be kind of fun. And then, I mean, I hope it wasn't disrespectful that you haven't read the book to her. Was that disrespectful?
No, we made it very clear that it was representing part of the book club.
Okay.
And by the way, I'm happy to read. We could try, you know what we could do? We could try another one of these where I actually do read the book.
Yeah.
Because I actually did want to read this one. But we do that all the time. I feel like we did the Michael Easter. We both read that book. Like we've read.
That's true. Then that could, yeah.
Yeah. I think I think this could be its own Kim spinoff and I could roll in whenever you needed me to, which could also be not at all. If you just wanted to make it a ladies' night, I'm totally fine with that. But I have been curious about this one in particular ever since I saw the effect that it had on you, which was it diverted you. It made you think. It made you, you know that Kim likes a book when she just disappears in the middle of the day to go read a book.
Well, I mean, we were also given the gift of vacations.
Yeah. But I think even when we got home, I can't remember, at some point you would just be like, I'm going to go read my book. And when that happens, that means it's a good book.
Yeah. Well, we love you guys for listening. Thanks for being here. Share with somebody who read the book. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.